going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Your station for the best Ravens coverage.
Bringing the team to the fans.
It's news from the nest.
We're grateful for our media. We really are, most of the time.
With Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Right now from Window Nation, buy two windows, get two free, and pay nothing until 2027. Offer ending soon. Schedule your free estimate at 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan here on this Monday. NFL Draft 2025 in the books. We'll talk to John Cooper of Our Lads about that around 1:30, so stay tuned for that. But Mel Kiper Jr., let's just say Mel was in the news a lot this weekend for his defense of Shedeur Sanders and yelling and screaming and arguing with his cohorts there at ESPN. But Mel Kiper Jr., gave Cleveland an A+, by the way, for their draft grade. Gave the Ravens a B+. Addressing needs, and Mel writes, top needs entering the draft, edge rusher, cornerback, safety, guard, kicker, I guess.
Yeah.
They got everything they needed there.
Well, I mean, it went right down the line of their needs. I mean, they took care of them. They needed depth in the O-line. They got three. Needed some D-line depth. They got one. You needed an inside backer. Got an inside backer. So, yeah, I thought addressing their needs, they covered them all.
Now, is that when you're grading? I mean, you don't know how this is all going to play out to 3 years from now is when you could really grade.
Grades are the stupidest things right now.
But is it based just on addressing needs and bringing in guys who are highly regarded at those respective positions here?
Well, I would guess the people grading people, you know, it's addressing needs, and then how the person that's giving them the grade had how these players ranked. Just like you said, Mel gave Cleveland an A+ because of Shedeur Sanders. You know, I mean, that's why. So, yeah. You know, like if the grader doesn't like some guy, you know, like with Cincinnati, I wouldn't have given them a great grade because I'm not a big Shamar Stewart guy, and he may make me look like a jerk, you know, if he comes out and has a few sacks against the Ravens, you know. So was I crazy about their draft? No. So would I have given them? And I wasn't crazy about Atlanta's because, you know, I wasn't crazy about their guys, some of their guys, you know, Pierce and some of those guys. So it's all about the grader. And then if you got what you needed.
Yeah, at Dallas, for instance, especially with their first couple of picks.
I loved it.
They filled two major needs there.
Yeah, Dallas, yeah.
Booker and Azaraku.
Yeah, Azaraku, I loved him, and I love Booker. So, you know, like Rashawn called it, that was too high, wasn't it? No. He's going to start for 10 years at left guard, and he's a stud. And Azaraku is going to fit, you know, opposite Micah Parsons, and they'll put Micah Parsons all over the place, and he'll get singled up a lot, and he'll win a lot of battles. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, Dallas had for those two picks, I give Dallas an A.
All right, let's get back to Eric DaCosta, and in particular the Justin Tucker loop conversation, as the Ravens do take a kicker for the first time ever in the draft, Tyler Loop. And here's Eric explaining that the loop drafting isn't really given any insight into what Tucker's future may or may not be.
Now, I haven't really thought about that at this point. I just thought he was a really talented player, and it made sense for us to do that for a lot of different reasons. You know, I mean, we've told you guys multiple times this spring that we would look at kickers, and so for us, it's like any other position this year. We evaluated all these guys. We felt like he was draftable. We felt like he was the best kicker, and it made sense for us to take him.
I mean, that was good PR by Eric. I mean, yeah. I give him credit there, but the thing about it is, you know, I mean, you're protecting your franchise, too, is what Eric's doing. I mean, you got a kicker that's probably going to get suspended, you know, and he had an up-and-down season as he got older. So, because after the season, Eric said that they would bring in competition. He did say that, but Tucker would be the kicker. Now, things have changed because of Tucker's off-the-field stuff, so I still believe they'll bring in a veteran guy, too. I think they'll bring in two kickers.
11 draft picks, filling needs. Eric DaCosta talking about not only filling needs, but drafting guys that could play right away.
Well, it was a long day, a couple of days, but happy the way that it transpired. I think we added some really interesting, good developmental players, some guys that can come in and help us right away, and some guys that, like, looking out, you know, I think we'll be looking back and saying, hey, these guys really helped our team.
Yes, and we just kind of talked about that, I think, Bob. You know, that they do have some guys that's going to definitely, they've got some guys that are definitely going to come in and help a real good football team. And when you have a real good football team, you know, if you have 11 picks and three, four guys can come in and help you, and a couple of them can come in and start, I mean, to me, that's a hell of a draft. And developmental-wise, it's going to be interesting to see, because they're not going to be able to keep them all. And will anybody else, you know, want to pick them up afterwards? I mean, because Green and Starks, definitely. Emory Jones, he'll probably help depth-wise if he can come around pretty quickly. Buchanan, worst case for Buchanan, special teams. Vincent will be no help this year. Cone, I got to watch Cone yet, the Western Michigan, I don't know. Loop will help. Wester, the Colorado kid, if he can be the punt returner, that'd be big. Otherwise, I don't, you know, Dellinger, probably fill a backup role, then you don't want him to have to come in and start right away. Now, I think that goes into development. But of the 11, some are going to end up being on the practice squad. I mean, Carson Vincent probably be on the practice squad, I would think.
It's 58-80-105-7 The Fan. When we come back here on this Monday, we're going to count some dough, hopefully buy or sell, talk about the many sports subjects of this day. Peter Schmuck from BaltimoreBaseball.com, talk about the struggling Orioles limping home after getting swept by Detroit. 10-17 on the year, 6.5 games behind the Yankees, who happen to be in town for the next 3 days. The draft profile number 2, talk about the Ravens' second-round draft pick, a pick that comes with a level of controversy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Are you buying?
Great cash, homie.
Or are you selling?
I'm not going to buy into that crap.
Penny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan.
58-80-105.7 The Fan here on this Monday. Hope you had a great weekend, everyone. Orioles-Yankees, 3-game set tonight down at Camden Yards. Orioles get swept in Detroit. We'll talk about that with Peter Schmuck in a few minutes here. NFL draft is over. Cam Ward, number 1 pick by the Tennessee Titans. Kind of got overshadowed, if you will, by the Shedeur Sanders news, which still percolates throughout the national and, kind of sort of local media landscape. Wonder what they're thinking in Cleveland, by the way, about this. Maybe I should text Ken and Anthony.
I'll guarantee you that all the talk shows, Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah, I know. It's like, eh, screw the Cavs, up 3-0, about to go to the NBA. Yeah.
Poor Mason Graham.
Yeah, number one pick.
Fifth pick in a draft.
All of that. But anywho, so plenty to get to, obviously. But Nolan and Vinny, before we get to the sports subjects of this day, let's count that dough, hopefully, by ourselves.
Well, the Dow's down 86. The S&P's down 39. NASDAQ is down 204. DraftKings down 81 cents. Under Armour's up 7 cents to 550.
All right, let's start here in the NFL. Maryland has produced another wide receiver for the NFL. Ty Felton selected by Minnesota in the third round, and he'll join a stacked position group that includes Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. Brings a skill set centered around speed. His 40 time was top six among wideouts at this year's combine. Also used to a pretty heavy workload as well as the Terps' lone weapon this past year. Vinny, are you buying or selling that Minnesota was an ideal landing spot for Felton to hit the ground running as a rookie?
Yeah, I'll buy that. You know, because he's got a couple good guys to learn from, and Addison was a rookie and went in and did some good things right away. The only negative might be J.J. McCarthy is also going to be a rookie. So if you're a rookie quarterback, probably I better throw to Justin Jefferson.
Yeah. Over to Major League Baseball here. When they changed the size of the bases a few years back, tweaked the rules for base stealing, pickoff attempts, all that stuff, naturally we saw an uptick in stolen bags. It went from about a half a stolen bag per game pre-rule change to 0.7 per game in 2023, last year up to 0.74, and so far this year, while it is a small sample size, 0.84 per game. So nothing but an upward trajectory here, taking off more and more than ever. Buy or sell, Bob, that rate will hold up over the full 162-game season this year.
Yeah, I'll buy it. I mean, you saw yesterday with the Orioles. I mean, Jorge Mateo, hey, got on base. What a coincidence. Stole two bases. Mm-hmm. So he brings that element. Yeah, De La Cruz, O'Neill Cruz, a bunch of other guys, Corbin Carroll. There's some speed on the base pass. It's disruptive, not just stealing for the sake of stealing. So, yes, Nolan McGraw, I'm buying that will maintain, if not increase, before the season. So,
back to the NFL, where the Bengals took Shamar Stort with their first-round pick, a move that they hope will bolster their pass rush, obviously. But with all the drama surrounding Trey Hendrickson, questions have naturally come up if this draft pick signals the team is willing to fully move on from Hendrickson. Well, Zach Taylor, he says the decision to take Stort was completely independent from Hendrickson, and that you can never have enough quality defensive linemen. Vinny, are you buying or selling that they would have taken Stort even if they had a long-term resolution for Hendrickson?
I'll buy that because their defense sucked. You know, I mean, a D coordinator got fired. You bring in a new D coordinator. Plus, Hendrickson, he's 30. So, but he's had two back-to-back, you know, what, 17 sack seasons? And having somebody else on the other side, I don't think that's all bad. I just would have taken somebody else.
Orioles going to take on the Yankees tonight. And, Bob, you were talking about this a little bit earlier. Devin Williams was the closer, highly coveted in that trade there for the Yankees. But he's now out of the closer role. Gave up three more runs in his latest appearance. First blown save of the season, but overall the struggle is very confusing for him, considering how great he was to this point in his career. ERA now above 11 so far in 2025. And Aaron Boone, well, he just went through this last year, uncertainty with the closer, so probably a little less patience this time around. Luke Weaver set to get the traditional closer opportunities for now, though Aaron Boone does admit that Williams could always be moved back at some point later this season. Buy or sell, Bob, Williams will not lead the Yankees in saves this season. Currently has four, Weaver with two.
I'm selling that. He'll get an opportunity to reestablish himself in a less pressure situation. So remember last year, the Orioles with Kimbrel. He sucked early, took him out of the closer role, came back, pitched well for pretty much a month and a half, and then really fell off the cart there. But Devin Williams will get an opportunity again to be the closer and will stabilize himself and lead the team in saves.
And our last topic of the day, in the NFL, the Giants. We know they traded up to land Jackson Dart there in the first round, a move probably somewhat out of desperation more than anything. You know, sure, you did add some vets in Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston, but neither of them are the future, maybe not even the present. Their GM, Joe Shane, head coach Brian Daboll, both referred to Russell Wilson as the week one starter for now. And the GM, Shane, even said that there could be a full shakeup coming to the quarterback room before week one, maybe implying that they don't need both vets anymore, but we'll see what happens. Buy or sell, Vinny, Dart will end up taking over as the Giants starter by at least week five.
Five? I'll sell that. I don't think five. I think once they're out of it, which could be week five. But I think once they're out of it, I think if they start losing, like they probably will, Nolan, I think the fan base will be pushing for that. And then that's going to be the only way that Daboll and Shane keep their jobs. If Dart shows promise, then they'll keep their jobs. Otherwise, no. They'll all be fired.
Is he third string right out of the gate?
I was going to say, because he admitted there they could shake up the room in training camp time, that they'll keep three? They'll keep the two vets and Dart, or they get rid of one of the vets?
I think you got to get rid of one of the vets because Dart's got to be the backup.
Tommy DeVito's still in the picture, too, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, maybe not.
I'm sure his agent's cooking something up.
Anyway, the Giants, they've got some problems. Ravens, you know, their problem is trying to get deep into the playoffs after usually dominating during the regular season. We'll talk more about that when we get to the NFL lunch portion of our program. But speaking of problems, Orioles got a ton of those right now. Last place in the American League East, Peter Schmuck, BaltimoreBaseball.com. Get his opinions on why things have gone south. Is it all about the injuries? Is it as simple as that? Where is the offense gone? Should they be shaking things up with the managerial position? Is Michael Elias become too arrogant for his own good? I don't know. Peter Schmuck's got his finger on the pulse of things. And then another draft profile coming up with the Ravens' second-round draft pick. Talented player, no doubt about it. But what are the red flags all about? But he's on the Window Nation guest hotline. He's with BaltimoreBaseball.com. Let's welcome back Peter Schmuck. Peter, good afternoon. How are you feeling today?
Not as good as I felt a year ago today, but I can't be helped, I guess.
But look, we can get into this. Could take forever trying to explain what's wrong with the Orioles. But if you had to put your finger on one thing that's surprising, bad. We knew the rotation was going to be shaky to begin with, especially down minus Grayson and Eplin. It's even worse than what? But what is the one thing that they suck at, for lack of a better word, now, Peter, that you didn't think they would be this bad at?
I think it's, you know, you have all the things you mentioned. You can line them all up, but what it all adds up to is chemistry. I mean, you can tell by looking at them. They just don't have the same zing that they had a year ago or 2 years ago. Now, whether they can get that back, I don't know. This season isn't hopeless. They're 7 games under 500. You win 3 or 4 in a row, you know, it's not that big a deal. It's just disturbing because it's almost mysterious. It's not totally mysterious because your pitching is a mess, and it's going to stay a mess for a while. I have high hopes for a little better look the next couple nights with Tomoyuki Sugano, who has pitched pretty well the last two times out, Cade Povich coming off a good outing. I have this hope that the Yankees coming to town is an elixir in a sense. Obviously, the Yankees are in better shape or a better team right now. But when the Orioles play the Yankees, it has a certain energy that pervades the whole stadium. And hopefully that helps because it's just so many, you know, it's the death of a thousand cuts. You look through the lineup and you see all these guys that should be playing better. You see all these guys are hurt. You know, this could stabilize in the next few weeks. It could, you know, you get Eflin back and maybe Grayson Rodriguez isn't going to be gone the whole year. And then you got the trading deadline. So it can be fixed. Well, let's just see if they fix it.
All right, Peter. One guy in particular I want to mention is Ryan Mountcastle, and they moved the wall in because apparently that did bother him when they moved it back, and we all know that Aaron Judge probably going to hit 3 home runs in this series, by the way. But anyway, when you watch Mountcastle, what are you seeing here? This is a guy that set the all-time rookie record for homers with 33 a couple years back, and when he's healthy, he's reliable. He's a gold glove level first baseman, but boy, he looks lost out there right now.
Yeah, and I wonder if the whole fence thing got in his head when the season started, you know, because he had adapted to some extent to the other fence, and he was going the other way, getting a lot of hits to right field, basically trying to play the middle of the field when he's at the plate. And I think, you know, he knows what his image is. He knows what's expected of him, that he's expected to hit 25 home runs. Pitchers are taking advantage of the fact that he's back trying to pull and again finding himself victimized by those sliders and cutters and stuff that drop off the outside part of the plate, and he fishes at it, and then he's behind in the count every time. When you're behind in the count and you're a guy who's supposed to be a power hitter, you're meat.
Peter Schmuck, BaltimoreBaseball.com, joining us here, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. The losses of James McCann, and you mentioned they don't seem the same, and there doesn't appear to be this injury in Anthony Santander from that clubhouse. And I know Rob Long and Rock Ibaka were talking on Masson yesterday before the game. There really aren't any clubhouse issues. But hey, look, McCann's not Johnny Bench, let's be honest. But when that leadership void is gone and you're a young veteran team, who needs to step up and kind of put foots up, rear ends, and all of that good stuff that has been time honored in baseball here?
You know, I'm glad you're bringing that up, because we talked about this when they made these decisions to let McCann go because he wanted a little longer contract, and bring in Gary Sanchez, who you probably could have got McCann for the same money you got Sanchez for 1 year. And, you know, people, the analytics people, those analytics don't gauge toughness. Okay. We know that James McCann's a 230 hitter at best, but he was a tough guy. He was a clubhouse leader. He was an example, not just a clubhouse leader. He was an example. And now you have a situation where, I said that this the other day, and I never like to question guys about injuries. I don't know. You know, we really don't know. But my first instinct was to say, if James McCann was here, a guy wouldn't be going on the disabled list with a sore neck or sitting out games because his neck is stiff. Now, I can't question Tyler O'Neill and how hurt he is and whether he belongs, what the deal is. I'm just talking about an overall sense that would be the thing that would strike me, is that in the clubhouse, after you see a guy or you hear about a guy who got hit in the face, square in the face by a 90-something mile an hour fastball and played the next 9 innings because they didn't have another catcher. That's the kind of toughness that makes other players in the clubhouse say, I can't say I don't feel well today. But there are a lot of guys saying they don't feel well this last couple of weeks. Okay. And I don't, you know, again, I don't want to judge that. I'm not there enough to judge that. But this team, that his team had for the last 2 years, it doesn't have right now. And I don't know. I don't know how they get that part of it back. It would probably hurt if Gunnar Henderson would get that look off his face of a guy who's not just frustrated, but almost from a baseball perspective, depressed. And I kind of think he's suffering a little bit from not having his boy Couser around all the time to jack him up and tell him to snap out of it. I don't know, but that's not the Gunnar Henderson we've seen the last couple of years. It's not even close.
Man, maybe give him that lightsaber that he apparently likes so much with that Star Wars. But Mike Elias taking a lot of heat here on this program, throughout the station, media trying to get on him in print and otherwise. How are we assessing Mike Elias at this stage? There's no rebuild anymore, Peter. It's all about winning a World Series. So why are they are where they are, and how culpable is Mike Elias for it?
Well, it's on him when they succeed. It's on him when they fail. That's part of being the GM and executive vice president. I think that's okay. You can criticize him if you want. I really think it all comes down to a couple things. One, that Corbin Burnes was never coming back here, and they should have probably sensed that, and maybe been more more proactive earlier in the off season. Maybe they could have gotten after somebody, you know, a Dylan Cease type better. But the other part of that equation is, you have to give up Colby Mayo and Basile. You got to give up two really good prospects to get a player like that. No one would have wanted to do that. And if he'd done that, we'd be questioning that right now. Look, because Corbin Burns ain't pitching that well right now either. And Santander isn't doing anything, you know, but that's normal for Santander in April. But it's easy to do that because they're playing bad, and so it's sort of everybody's fault. Everybody wants to get on Brandon Hyde. I mean, Brandon Hyde could have easily been manager of the year all of the last 3 years. He put 191 games without a pitching staff last year. He's going to have to do that again this year, and I don't know if he can do it 2 years in a row, but he certainly doesn't deserve to be fired if he does.
Peter, speaking of, like, Hyder is, you know, he seems like the – you know, like Bill Parcells used to say about buying the groceries and everything. It doesn't seem like really Hyder and doesn't seem like he gets to hire his coaches. You know, I mean, they run batting coaches in and out like anything. And is that Elias? And then Elias with the lineups and all too? You know, it's got to be tough to beat a manager.
I would really doubt that Elias is filling out the lineup card. You know, there may be a pressure to give a few extra starts to get to get Gary Sanchez going. I don't know, that kind of thing. I have no idea how the coaching stuff. No one ever really reveals anything about moving the coaches in and out. You know, I don't know if it's scapegoating. I've been around so many teams where, you know, something goes wrong and they got to fire a coach because they got to fire somebody. And, you know, I don't think you win 91 games and lose a couple games in the playoffs and you start fighting and you say, oh, we got to change the whole program because of that. I mean, the fans can say that because they want to go farther than that. All of us want to go farther than that. But this team was running very well for the last 3 years, and it's not running very well now. And it's fair to be frustrated, and certainly fair for fans to be frustrated, because it has that feel like they went over the hump for this rebuild, and now they're on the way down instead of up. And it does feel that way. I don't know. I wouldn't say it definitely is that way. They got a lot of young talent, a lot of young offensive talent on the team, you know, and they're going to hit eventually, but you don't want to start when you're 20 games under 500. So it's got to start pretty soon, maybe tonight.
Peter Schmuck, BaltimoreBaseball.com. Peter, appreciate your time as always. Enjoy this Yankee series. They're always fun. And we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, I'm sure.
Thanks, Peter.
Guys, really appreciate it.
Yeah, Peter Schmuck, man. Bringing the heat.
Yeah.
Like Elias even said, I don't do the lineup. But as a front office, we do make suggestions that could possibly help that. When we come back, Vinny's draft profile number 2, second round pick of the Ravens, out of Marshall by way of Virginia. Good football player, but there are some issues here. NFL lunch, 1 o'clock, American League East report at 1:15. What happened over the weekend in the division outside of the Orioles getting their pants pulled down in Detroit. And then John Cooper from OurLads.com. Let's talk about Cam Ward, the number 1 pick in the draft going to Tennessee. His instant impact will be what if there is one.
Vinny Serrato's Draft Profiles. News, notes, and analysis on the 2025 NFL Draft Class. Vinny and Haney. Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan.
The first thing that jumped out at me was his motor. You know, he's a relentless player. Like, he is talking about a guy that plays the way our fans like to watch football played. He plays like a guy that really cares. Just the football IQ, the football character is very high.
It's Ravens head coach John Harbaugh talking about the Ravens' second round draft pick out of Marshall by way of Virginia. Mike Green.
Yeah, Mike Green from Marshall, 6'3", 251. 32-inch arms, which are a little short. 8.5 hands, which are not big at all. 28 reps, 2.25, excellent senior. 2021, Virginia, played in 6 games as a reserve, had 4 tackles and a sack. 2022, redshirted, that's when he left, you know, Virginia and went to Marshall. So in 23, at Marshall, he played in all 13 games, 1 start, 43 tackles, 9 tackles for loss, 4.5 sacks, 1 forced fumble. And then this past year at Marshall, Sun Belt Defensive Player of the Year, 17 sacks, 22.5 tackles for loss, started all 13 games, 84 tackles, 2 PBUs, and he was also a wrestler in high school. Now, his strengths, size, base, balance. He can spin. Good athlete. Shows a burst to the quarterback. Good bend. Flexible. Strong. Fluid hips. Good takeoff. Good punch. Speed to power. Understands leverage. He can punch, lock out, shed, and find a ball. Great effort, like Harbs had just said. Uses his hands well to shed, showing a closing burst. He'll chase. Good feet. He can dip the shoulder to beat the tackle. Good balance. Stays off the ground. Fluid spin move. Good change of direction. Takes good angles. Good motor. Violent hands. And he had a real good week at the Senior Bowl. I think that's when, like, everybody started elevating him at the Senior Bowl. Weaknesses. He'll get high some and overpowered by big offensive tackles. He'll need work on more moves, which he'll get with Chuck Smith. Arm length, questionable. Limited experience dropping into coverage, which he only had 21 snaps. You know what? And if he's getting 17 sacks for you, you're an idiot if you're dropping him into coverage anyhow. In summary, this kid has pass rush skill, showed development at the Senior Bowl, very good athlete, very flexible, and good hand use rushing. Arm length could hurt him some in the run game versus offensive tackles. I like him for the Ravens as a rusher. Love his play mentality. That's basically what Harb said, too. You know, but, I mean, he's a legitimate pass rusher. He can bend the corner. He can do all those things. Arms are a little short, which could help him, hurt him against long-arm tackles in the league. But I think we're going to see a lot of him this year.
Now, Jeff Zrebeck from The Athletic did his post-draft winners and losers. And among the losers, young edge rushers Malik Ham, Adiza Isaac, and David Ajabo, because of the guy we just talked about, who's going to come in and, if not start, have a very significant role.
I think
the
hurt.
Other three could be on the outside looking in.
Well, I think, Bob, I think you could add a fourth one to that. I think you could add Owe, because why? Then, let's say Mike Green does well, and then they don't need to pay Owe then.
All right. Yeah, well, he gets 10 more sacks, though, then.
He's going to get $20 million a year.
Right. But he's probably in. Okay, that's great. Let's see a duplicate season.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Bob, that'd be an awesome problem to have. Oh, damn. We got to decide if we're paying Owe or not. He had 10 more sacks. Okay.
Yeah,
at least it's a discussion.
A year ago at this time, we're talking about a guy that had 13 and a half sacks total.
Right.
In 3 years, gets 10 in one season. So as opposed to being a bust, he's now a guy that might be getting a big payday. But with Ajabo, though, it hasn't happened for him for whatever reason. Injuries played a major role, obviously.
And Bob, the only thing is like Ajabo, I remember you mentioned this, was like he had 16 sacks in one year.
Yeah. He had one tackle in the previous couple of seasons heading into that bust-out season with old Aiden Hutchinson on the other side of the line.
All right, so to that point with Mike Green, one-year starter, Bob. One-year starter, but it was, he was defensive player of the year with 17 sacks.
Led the country in sacks.
Yeah, started 13 games. So, all right, is he getting ready to take off now? That's what you're hoping is. Like, that's just the beginning.
Orioles tonight taking on the Yankees. American League East report coming up here in about 15, 20 minutes or so. Talk about the draft from outside of Baltimore, just covering AFC North. Concentrate there with John Cooper from OurLads.com. But we'll come back, feed you some more football, NFL lunch style. Hear more from Eric DaCosta talking about his draft class of 2025. Rookie minicamp is this weekend, which is also
Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah, Derby weekend's coming up, or Saturday is the Derby. Canelo Alvarez fight Saturday. Got a big boxing card at Times Square Friday night. Plus, the Orioles have Kansas City. They're giving stuff away. Stanley Cup, NBA playoffs, very much hot and heavy. I mean, it's a busy time of the year for sports. Yeah. Weather's changing. The grills are cooking. Nolan's smiling. What more do you want on a Monday?